Hello, you're very welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast. Coming to you a little bit later than usual this Wednesday, but for very good reason. We have been patiently waiting for Simon Easterby to reveal his first Ireland squad ahead of the Guinness Six Nations next month. Myself and Bernard Jackman are here with you to run through the big talking points from that. And we'll also dive into a little bit of the Investec Champions Cup final pool games as well. So to start, here are the main details of the Six Nations squad announced probably just over half an hour ago by Simon Easterby. It is a 36-player squad. We have just one uncapped player in the main squad. That's Leinster's Jack Boyle, who was involved in the wider squad and training panellist in November. Four players are named as additional training panellists, which is now becoming the norm in these Ireland squads. James McNabney from Ulster, Ben Murphy and Cathal Ford from Connacht, and Hugh Cooney from Leinster. Worth noting, two of the training panellists in November actually did go on to make debuts in the full squad, so that door is still open. There's no place for Tom O'Toole, a tight head prop. He's suspended, obviously, for the first couple of games. Thomas Clarkson is in, like he was in November. Caelan Blade gets the third scrum half spot behind Jameson Gibson-Park and Conor Murray. James Lowe and Dan Sheehan are both included. They will join the squad later in Portugal next week. That's if they get through Leinster's game against the Stormers. And potentially as well, they might even be playing this weekend against Bath in the Champions Cup. And in terms of the back row, a couple of bits in there. Jack Conan is back in the squad. He missed out on November through injury. Cormac Izichukwu and Cian Prendergast are both also in there. No Nick Timoney. He's been left out. While there's also no place for Munster's Tom O'Hearn, who is probably one of the in-form players on the outskirts. Bernard, there's a lot to take in, I suppose, there. Ultimately, it's probably nothing that there are probably no major surprises in there. I think maybe some of the talking points are probably a couple of players who just about missed out, or maybe some of the training panelists. What jumps out to you immediately when you look at that squad?
Yeah, when I looked at it originally and I saw 40 players named, I was like, yeah, that's everybody, isn't it? You know, who's in the run. And then you mention, you know, Ahern and Timoney, and they're very unlucky, you know. Mm-hmm. They're very unlucky, but they're just in a very competitive area. Like, you couldn't doubt, you know, Van der Fleer or Doris or form or Conan's ability, even if it's off the bench, to give impact. They're just in a very, very tricky area. And McNabney is a player I'm glad to see him in. I've always thought he's had a huge athletic profile, but, you know, just seeing him bring that to an Irish Inter Pro over Christmas, you know, means he definitely deserves to be in there as a development player. And I think Dan Sheehan back is massive. Ireland can play differently, Leinster can play differently with him in the team. He's that good, and I think, you know, providing he goes back from his injury in the same form, I would say he'd be the starting hooker for the British and Irish Lions. That's how highly I rate him. You know, Tom O'Toole, obviously, you would imagine come back into the picture after a suspension. But it's a great opportunity for Clarkson and Boyle as young props to be part of the senior squad again. And obviously Jack has a chance of getting his first cap. So no, it's a good setting squad. I don't think there'll be massive changes. Well, obviously we've seen it now, but even in terms of selection, I think Farrell will keep a close eye on things. Simon will do his best to try and retain the Six Nations, and you know, any caps that are given out will be earned.
On Dan Sheehan, would you expect him? I mean, if he gets, even if he doesn't play this weekend, if he gets from the sound of things, they're obviously heading off to Portugal midway through next week. For their training camp, which will be probably about the guts of a week. They'll be back in Ireland by, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday of the England week. In terms of Dan Sheehan, so himself and James Lowe are going to join up with the squad on Sunday week. So that'll be the day after Leinster play the Stormers, and they'll be with the squad in Portugal for a couple of days after that before coming home again. If Sheehan gets game time either this weekend or next weekend, do you think he'll be involved against England in the opening game?
I'd imagine if he got through, you know, 50 minutes for Leinster against the Stormers, that he could be on the bench for Ireland the following week. I think they'll be keen to fast track him. I think it's great that him and James are staying to get a game rather than go training. Obviously, Dan has been out for longer, but I've no doubt that there's been conversation with Leinster, and the plan is for him to get game time. And yeah, I would certainly have him in the 23 the following week. I just think, obviously, I think he's good enough to start, but At this stage, coming back from injury, this maybe off the bench, for his first test back, might be the way to ease him in.
Yeah, just over 7 months on from doing his ACL. It's obviously been a very straightforward recovery for him, thankfully, which is good to see, and bodes well for his Lions chances as well, as you said. Particularly because I think when that happened last summer, a lot of people would have thought that's an enormous dent to his hopes of being a Lion next summer. Some of the other talking points then. I know we're even just going as far as like third choice scrum half. Like, you were on Morning Ireland this morning giving your plug for Ben Murphy to get that third spot as scrum half. It is a Connacht scrum half who's got it. It's Caelan Blay. Is that, I suppose, as much a reward for him probably coming in and doing a lot of the unseen and unheralded work in Ireland squads down the years without really getting the reward as much as it is for his current form? Because on current form, if you're picking a Connacht scrum half, Ben Murphy probably is the man.
Yeah, he is the man. But I think, I think because they didn't have a look at him in November, it was always going to be hard for him to get into the squad. And Blades, he'll find it hard to accept that. He would have felt, you know, he's number one for Connacht. He should be further up the pecking order internationally. But Caelan Blades never let Ireland down, and Farrell and now Easterby have always been quite trusting of those players who've come into camp and performed well. Well, even though sometimes we don't get to see a lot of them on the pitch, they judge them on what they're like in the environment, what they're like at training, etc. So Blades gets to hang in there, and obviously, you know, I think there's no doubt it'll be Gibson Park and Murray, and we might not need to go to our third choice nine this November, hopefully, or this Six Nations hopefully. But yeah, they want to have someone in there who's been in that test environment before, and I think that's the reason that he gets the nod. And it could be a great thing for him. It could give him a bit of confidence and a freshness as well to go back and take that battle to Murphy to a new level.
Would you have concerns about the age profile of the squad?
Yeah, I would. I would, to be fair, but it's probably been clear since the World Cup, or even since Farrell came in, that's he's not ageist in any way. You know, it's you build up credit in the bank. When you get opportunity to play, you do your job, and he will stay loyal to you. And yeah, it's but obviously from the outside, if you're just doing it purely on you know, age comparisons to the other Six Nations teams, I'd say we're probably one of the older squads as such, and that's fine. Everyone cuts it up differently, but for him, he trusts these players, and they haven't let him down in the past, and until they do, I think he'd be very loyal to them.
Yeah, like that is, because it was even, I suppose, highlighted, I suppose, by in the last couple of days where England named their squad and France named their squad today. Now, I know with the France squad, obviously, like, they're bringing back Rabah Slimani from a long exile out of the French squad, but that's probably necessity as much as anything. They're missing a lot of players, but you know, there are quite a few younger players in that squad that have been given an opportunity. There's been a big, I would, massive evolution in the wider squad under Fabien Galthié in the last 12 months or so. Similar with England as well. There are a lot of younger players being brought in and some of the older players being phased out. Like, at what point do you see this starting to happen with Ireland? Because we're heading into a situation where Cian Healy has strongly hinted, for example, that he'll be retiring at the end of the season. Conor Murray yesterday was saying he's unsure really what he's going to do beyond the summer. He's out of contract. Peter O'Mahony is another one who could be gone as well. Are you expecting the summer tour to the summer games, I suppose it's against Romania and Georgia, I think it is. Is that where we're going to see the bit of evolution in the Ireland squad, when we assume a chunk of Ireland players are going to be away with the Lions as well?
Yeah, no, 100% we'd see a lot of bodies there, but I don't think we can even judge that. It'll really be, you know, with the All Blacks in Chicago, or those November games where we get a feel for what Ireland, the Irish rugby squad 25-26 is going to look like that season. And I think, to be fair to Farrell, I think he likes to leave the players themselves to, you know, retire on their own terms. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm talking about legacy players, the Murrays, the O'Mahonys, the Sextons, the Healys, you know, players who have over 100 caps and have achieve great things for Ireland. He tends to let them kind of figure it out themselves when they've had enough. And obviously the contracts run, those contracts you mentioned run till the summer. So if they're recontracted, then and their form drops, obviously there's a conversation needed to be had. But in general, players of that ilk seem to work it themselves. It's interesting, like, so Peter Mahoney obviously didn't play last weekend, but I spoke to Alex Codling in Limerick, who's now the forwards coach for Munster, and he just said he never knew how good Peter Mahoney was, and that's not being disrespectful. Like, mm-hmm. he obviously knows he's very good because you don't achieve what you achieve, but he just said actually working with him on a daily basis, it's blown him away. How easy he is to coach, how motivated he is, how professional he is, how talented he is, particularly around the lineup, because that's obviously Alex's area of responsibility. But it's just, yeah, when you hear it from someone who's kind of an outsider, who's worked in England, in the Premiership, worked in France in the top 14, you know, it's been around, and, you know, they get blown away by a player who we don't take for granted, because obviously he's a legend in Irish rugby, but you kind of think, oh, maybe he's on the way out and maybe still doesn't have anything to offer. And then someone like him is just, you know, blown away by him. It shocked me. It shocked me because I didn't hear him. He was talking about it like every player, you know, and he knows his onions. So, so Pete, Connor, Keen, they'll probably get to the side themselves and rightly so.
And in line with that then, like, the people out there who might be a bit disappointed not to see a bit more change, who might say it's a very safe squad, you kind of do have to point out on the flip side that this is Simon Easterby coming in as an interim appointment. There's no Andy Farrell. You probably want a good degree of continuity up until Andy Farrell returns. With that in mind then, what do you expect to see from Simon Easterby's Ireland? Do you think he's going to be, has he been given a very detailed handover by Andy Farrell and probably told, don't change too much of the furniture around the place, and, you know, given some strict instructions about how to run things? Or do you see him being given license to try out something new with this team, or to change the game plan a little bit?
Yeah, I think if he obviously felt there was a way forward to be more successful, he would be given the license. But I also think, just listen to people around the squad, they were quite frustrated with their own game in November, you know, that they didn't implement what they want to do. And there were certain fixes that they need to put in place. And that's going to be, I would say, the focus is to get Ireland back. And to be honest, this has been kind of lingering, bar the French game in the Six Nations round one. You know, it's been harder for us, or we haven't been able to just be as dominant as we were the 2 years beforehand. So, you know, is that still possible with the way the game is being refereed? Is that still possible with how everyone now is very clear about how Ireland play, you know? So that element of surprise is gone, and we've seen teams shut Ireland down through different ways. Do we need to evolve? I'm not sure. I'd say they'll have analysed, you know, the hell out of the four tests in November, and we'll have the fixes there to try and get back into that free flowing, you know, high tempo possession game that Farrell has played. So that's what I see. I see him trying to get back to where they were at, and obviously with some evolution as well. And the challenge is going to be obviously to guess the majority of your players who play one way for a province and then get them to play a different way for Ireland. So, like, generally when Leinster are attacking well, Ireland attack well. And getting one team to attack well when the other isn't is a challenge for both Leinster and Ireland. You know, and where is it coming from? You'd have to say it's coming from Leinster, but maybe not. Maybe the whole thing has just dropped off a little bit across both parties. But I'd imagine, I'd be shocked if they weren't focusing on that. And this camp in Portugal would be really important. Okay, people mightn't agree that the warm weather training is needed if you're going to be playing in the spring in Aviva. But it does give them a chance to just get everybody back into the same language, the same philosophy, the same shapes that Ireland want to play, and forget about what colour jersey you wear for the next 7 or 8 weeks and get on and try and win a Six Nations. So the idea, you know, the criticism which is out there about Ireland not evolving and, you know, no fresh faces or none of fresh faces, I think, you know, back to Eddie O'Sullivan's time, Ireland have always been very clear around this competition and how important it is. And we've rarely seen much experimentation unless the team were in a really bad place and there was no choice. So, yeah, I think that's always the way it's going to be. The summer tour is always a great chance, but this year it'll probably be the opposition we play and also the fact that so many international players will be with the Lions. It's not your normal summer tour either. Yeah. So it's kind of like a Churchill Cup back in the day, a little bit, you know, but still an opportunity for players to get into that Irish setup and show what they can do. But yeah, Slimani going to France, Slimani being picked for France, that Leo will be delighted with that one. you know, like left field, but like great for him. I mean, great for him. And it's also interesting, you know, France never had to make a rule about players leaving the top 14 to be eligible because it just hasn't happened. Yeah. It hasn't happened, you know. Back in the day, there was a little bit of a relationship between the Sharks, you know, and French players. But by and large, you know, Frisch came to Ireland but via Bristol and he wasn't in the reckoning there. It's a really interesting move by Galtier. I'd say the French clubs wouldn't be overly keen on it because it potentially, you know, makes it harder for them to retain players. I know it's only one player, but you can imagine players and agents will now, you know, not be afraid to say, oh, we can go to Premiership and be a marquee player in the Premiership and still play for France. And it's also interesting, you know, what they ask, well, what Slimani's role is the week of the Ireland game, you know. And obviously, what is he in the 23 or is he someone who's just given him, you know, giving them really good information around, you know, the Irish game and the Irish players.
You'd have to think there's definitely an element there. And I think maybe it might have been mentioned around the time that John Klein was brought back in South Africa, that if it's coming down to a decision between, if it's a really close decision between Rabah Slimani and player X, you're going to go with Rabah Slimani because he is scrummaging day in, day out with, 80-90% of those other Irish front rows?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if Razzie did it, we'd be saying, oh, he's just doing the...
Chapeau, Razzie.
Yeah, exactly. Throwing petrol on the fire. But, I didn't, to be honest. Like, I think Rabah's been great. Obviously, player of the month for Leinster for December. You know, started and coming off the bench, both roles equally well, but a lot of the value he's brought has been, you know, I think his ability to maybe bring through some of the young props, you know, it wasn't necessarily I think he'll be shocked by it. I'm sure he got the heads up, but he'll be shocked by it, and it's great for him. It's absolutely great for him if he can add to his caps, because he's really bought into the whole experience over here. And yeah, he's playing well. You wouldn't have thought France would have needed to bring him back, but as you said, to have some injuries there. And I think it's quite creative by Galtier, and fair play to him.
Final point on the Six Nations stuff, and we'll move back in with the Champions Cup. We mentioned the four training panelists a little earlier on: James McNabney from Ulster, Ben Murphy and Cal Ford from Connacht, and Hugh Cooney from Leinster. Specifically, I do want to talk about James McNabney because he is someone who I think, in particular, in the last, I'd say 2 months, when Ulster have really, really been struggling at times, he's been this kind of shining light for them in a position where they actually do have quite good depth. And he is someone who has just kind of grabbed his opportunity and has, you know, forced his way into, I say Andy Farrell, but Simon Easterby's mind as well. If you're James McNabney, is the first person you're getting in touch with Gus McCarthy to say, what did you do in Portugal?
Yeah,
to really beat down that door.
100%, and obviously Farrell's not there, but he does seem to look at those youngsters and take an impression quite quickly around their margin for progression and their readiness to go now. And I think, you know, there's no secret that he liked Sam's way about him, you know, back in an Emerging Ireland tour and then obviously in the senior tour where he didn't play but spent a lot of time with him. Gus came into that camp and just took his opportunity. And there's no reason why McNabney wouldn't. Like, when you have that level of athleticism and power, he can catch the eye quite quickly, you know. And look, we know it's the depth there is massive, and he's only there as a development player. But every chance he gets to be either playing against Irish teams in Interpros or on the biggest stage of Europe or in camp for the Six Nations, is a test, is a trial. And, you know, we're so lucky. You mentioned Timoney and Ahern, but like the next generation, the McNabneys and the Gleasons, just to name two, like they're serious players, you know, they're serious players. So like, if you're any of those, if you're Jack Conan, you know, Peter Manny, you're looking over your shoulder and you're looking a long way back, because they're coming in droves.
And I think there's a concerted effort, not just inside the Irish squad, but across the four provinces as well, that there's a recognition that under-20s crop, spanning maybe the kind of 2022 to 2024 period, the kind of 2-3 season period, that there's a very, very special bunch of players in there. Yeah. And they probably need to start getting the minutes and start getting the senior appearances maybe a bit quicker than under-20s players have in the past. And I think we're seeing it right across the provinces, whether it's Sam Prendergast getting pushed the whole way through to the Ireland squad or Gus McCarthy as well. But then you also have McNabney at Ulster, who's getting a lot of game time. You mentioned Brian Gleeson. Ruan Quinn is another one of them as well at Munster, along with Evan O'Connell. Matthew Devine at Connacht. There's a huge list of them up in Ulster as well. There's a couple of more who've been getting good game time. There's definitely a recognition that is a very special bunch of players that probably need to get their opportunities sooner rather than later.
100%. And that's probably the slight criticism I have of the Irish system, and it's you're being ultra critical, but to criticize it, but it has been quite safe, you know, that you could rack up a lot of provincial games over 10 or 12 years without ever having to worry about your security, you know, or to go get a contract somewhere else. It was only really last year when we saw, you know, squad budgets being cut a little bit, as you saw, you know, more departures. And that cull as such does give opportunities for young players. Now, the challenge to that is being patient while those players acclimatize to the next step up, you know, and the results. But certainly, you know, Richie's had to, it'd be part of his philosophy anyway, but he's had to blood some more young players quickly because of budget cuts. Connacht, you know, there was a lot of experience went out last summer, and you know, new players like Murphy, Ford, you know, Gavin, are now in a running. Devine, as you mentioned, are running for more game time. Just someone, look at all the players you mentioned will be very familiar to a lot of the people who watch provincial rugby, but there's the best of them all is injured at the moment. Niall Smith, the tight head. From Blackrock College, who's Gus McCarthy's teammate. He is special. He's the next Tyke Furlong. He had his shoulder operated on last month, so we won't see him till, I mean, he might be back maybe for that summer tour. But you know, Clarkson's amazing. Boyle's really good. All that stuff. Clarkson, all those lads we know about. But Niall Smith is the next Gus McCarthy type to come from nowhere fast.
All right, RT Rugby Podcast listeners, buy your stock right now. Get in while the price is low and cash in 10 years' time when he's a two-time British and Irish Lion.
Fantasy rugby.
We'll move on to the Champions Cup because there's actually plenty to get through from that. We were very critical, as were a lot of people earlier on in the tournament this season, about the way it was going, the format, etc., not really generating great games. Let's give it its credit where it's due. La Rochelle Leinster and Munster Saracens, two games that, like, they weren't 35-34 matches. They weren't tri-fests. They were both fairly error-strewn, low scoring. But sometimes those kind of games can just lead you to a brilliant contest. And I think that's what we got across both of those. Two absolutely enthralling games of rugby for all of the imperfections that they had along the way.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed them. I enjoyed them immensely. The Leinster game from from the radio studio, and then I was lucky enough to be at the Munster match. I nearly got killed actually in the Munster match because I was going across. I was doing second co-com, and I was supposed to go over to the panel for post match. So when Munster got possession and the ball wind down the clock, I left and I was waiting for this big cheer, and then I heard a massive groan because Munster lost the ball with a couple of seconds to go. So as I was running back up the stairs, I tripped. So lucky to survive. But look, yeah, it was dramatic. The atmosphere was back. Like they're the nights I remember, or days I remember in with fond memories in Thomond, was when an English team came to town and they were hyped up, and Munster just played Munster rugby, and they'd be scratching their heads. You interviewed Mark McCall, I heard, after the game, and he was kind of going, "We just have to find out what happened in that 5 minute period." And it was just, the game was won in a shot, and despite Munster being under the pump, you know, for most of the first half, and struggling to play their game, huge amount of errors, needed 33, sorry, they had 23 handling errors out of 33, something like that. And yes, you know, the two tries they scored were excellent. And different as well, you know. They found it. They adapted their attack a little bit to targets where Saracens were weak, executed it, and then defended again heroically when they needed to. So, you know, the most, Prendy would be happy with those two tries, but he won't be happy with elements of their attack because, you know, they looked a bit stuffy, I think, in the first half anyway. But Leamy, I mean, you know, given how the defence has been going, you know, the Ulster defensive performance, you know, it was incredibly impressive statistically, you know, but you'd have to criticize Ulster for not being able to turn all that possession and territory into scores, and it'd been very direct, and Munster thrived on that. And there was an element of matching that power from Saracens on Saturday, but there was also an element of just defending well and smartly. And I know they were under pressure at the end when Liam Williams dropped the ball, but in general they looked pretty comfortable. And you know, Burke's a good operator at 10. Saracens have good attacking players, and that was a very good defensive performance to keep them to such a low score. So yeah, great night for Munster, great night in Thomond, and obviously the Leinster game was, as you said, wasn't free flowing, but it was enthralling.
To stick on the Munster game while we were discussing it there, you obviously, like, the handling errors were off the chart from a Munster point of view, like to a bizarre degree. Mm. And you were talking everything from passes to contestable kicks. The pitch definitely wasn't in great condition on the night. They obviously had the
covers.
They had the covers on it all during the week to protect from the snow, and obviously you were starting with difficult winter conditions to begin with anyway. And some of the players on both sides actually said that there was just mud and dirt picking up on the ball all evening, and they were all finding it really, really difficult. The thing that Ian Costello I feel was most happy about, though, was the work rate. And it was really interesting. He was talking about that yesterday in his press conference. And like, he was talking about the work rate on defence and just kind of getting around corners and, you know, getting around edges. But he said that specifically the data that they've been able to get since the game, you know, with all the various GPS trackers, that three Munster players on Saturday evening set a new personal best for speed reached in any game before. Three, and he said he's never seen more than one player hit a new personal best for, you know, just a speed reached in a game, and three individuals did it on Saturday night. He wouldn't say who. He didn't want to name names and embarrass anyone, and it's led to a lot of people throwing out suggestions over who had particular breaks or big sprints during the match as well. But it does speak to the work rate that they had on the night to make sure they got over the line in the end.
Yeah, if it was me, I'd be checking the satellite information. It sounds, look, it's
was
it's,
was, it's, was one of the, was the, was one of them you racing down to the
maybe
to
yeah,
this, to but the I was studio actually rolling over.
No. But look, I think it'd be very strange. Look, he has the data, I don't have it, but on a heavy pitch, it will be unusual to hit your high speed meter or your high speed record. Likewise, three players. But I think what the message the message. And what I wouldn't doubt for a second was that they're some of their work rate stats, and I'd say things like getting off the ground quickly, reload, scramble, efforts on efforts. I'd imagine that they were incredibly high, but and he's right to, you know, to, I suppose, send that message through the media back to his own players that as a management team, they're incredibly happy with those aspects, you know, and that'll be that monster grit, that monster fight, that willingness to go somewhere you've never gone before. It would be really important to them. You know, it'll be really important to them because they'll have to go to the well again this weekend. And I know Northampton, you know, they let themselves down with an obviously result in Stade Francais. But what we saw them last year in Croke Park, you know, winning the Premiership, even though Bath had a man sent off, some of the performances this season, you know, they're a dangerous side. They're a dangerous side who are different than Sarri's. I mean, Sarri's, Sarri's main attacking threat was those attacking kicks, you know, which were excellent. And a power game, a pressure game. Northampton are a lot more, I would just say it's technical attack wise, you know. So Sam Vesti is widely recognized as being one of the best attacking minds in English rugby. And you know, I spoke to Dan Bigger about him before, and he said he's probably one of the best coaches ever worked with in terms of technical understanding of how to manipulate the defense. So that's a challenge. Pitch will be it's a good track there. They play, so it's a different threat for Munster. So but what Costello, and I thought he spoke very well after the game to RT, you know, he's quite consistent in what he's looking for. Now the argument could be, you know, because they were so fresh and they had time off and all that stuff, that they got a record, three record meters or high speed meters. But yeah, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant, really. What's important is that they're feeling good about themselves, and they are building towards what's a mammoth game in Europe, which is where Munster's reputation has come from, to be fair.
It was quite interesting afterwards. Tadhg Byrne, God bless Tadhg Byrne. We were all wondering, were players ever going to say anything interesting again after the whole Mac Hansen stuff? And Tadhg Byrne gave us some gold on Saturday evening. We were asking him, obviously, about the new laws and what he thinks of them. They may as well wrap up the nines in cotton wool at this stage. It's becoming ridiculous, in my opinion. I was just joking. I said to Conor Murray, that there's another 5 years left in his career yet. Tadhg Byrne is not a fan of the new clampdown now and how you can't be, you know, going after the scrum half within a metre of the ruck, etc. What do you think of that? And similarly as well, what did you see around the line-out stuff over the weekend? Has that changed the approaches of any teams where, you know, the crooked throws now, for example, won't be punished if it's an uncontested line-out? Has that... Did you notice any little trends or any early adaptations from teams?
To be honest, I rang a few coaches who were coaching professionally last week just to see what I wasn't really worried about the lineouts. The lineout thing is obviously it's something to be wary of. But the big one was the nines at the scrum.
Yeah,
you know, and how teams,
because obviously, like Tadhg Byrne, for example, was speaking as a player who has kind of mastered that art over the last few years.
Like I can understand why he's annoyed, but it's. It's probably because Irish teams are quite obsessed about being really negative at the defensive ruck, if you get me. You know, so like we judge ourselves or Andy Farrell or Jacques Nienaber or Dennis Leamy, when they look at a defensive performance, they're looking for people who are able to slow down the opposition, take them out of sync. And that little hand or grab for on a nine, or even the threat to do it for a second can just get you a chance to get set and get off the line. So Tadhg Byrne is a menace at the breakdown, right? So anything that he thinks is going to make him more penalizable, he's not going to like. I think the issue, and I think he did mention as well how it's another change mid-season. You know, like, and I do have sympathy for the players from that point of view. And I think that's why, to be honest, Neil, we didn't see a huge amount of creativity around any of those law changes at the weekend. You know, because, as I said to you, I rang some coaches and they were all basically saying, look, we're just waiting to see who comes up with something. Yeah. And I actually, you know, Sarries were probably the team that everybody was excited to watch because historically they have, even without rule changes, have saw a rule in a different way, got clarification and adapted. I think, obviously, you're going to see a lot more eights running. But as one attack coach said to me, yeah, we know our eights now can get over the gain line, but what do we do from there? You know, like it looks great and it's great for his stats and he might get the run out of 10 and get him in. But like, what are you going to do after that? Like, is it worth that 3 or 4 meters you're going to get off the back of the scrum that you know you're guaranteed now? Or do you actually kind of go, okay, let's just play what we would have played anyway, because it's going to get us in a different area of the field. There's more of a chance of a line break. We can resource that. We can hit them on a second phase, et cetera. Or is there opportunities because of what the nine is doing differently to play a different type of strike? Like, for example, scrum on the right-hand side now. You know, the nines historically went and put pressure on that nine pass back left. And a lot of teams used to just play nine to blind wing. And the nine wing would charge you the 10 and then they play the play off that. But you had to go back quite a bit with the pass to get to them to avoid the nine. So now I think the problem is going to be for defences is because that nine can pass that ball to 12 literally on the gain line without any pressure. I mean, it's going to be harder to stop a little bit further out. And then he can obviously play out the back to the 10, or you could even get the 8 pass to the 12 out the back to 9, etc. So they're the things I think we didn't see a huge amount of at the weekend across all competitions, but it'll come in now. Like the one thing I saw clarified from the referees, and the problem for the referees was they actually were going into that some games this weekend not really sure of the exact principle of the law, if you get me. Like, they know the law, but you know what happens if this happens, you know? And like, one of the questions I saw answered was, is a single lift a contested lineout, you know? And it is, right? So like, are we going to, and I'm being a bit facetious here, but like, would you like put your nine at the front of the lineout and just put a prop behind them and, you know, and effectively throw him up every time?
Yeah.
But you're not really contesting. Do you know what I mean?
If make,
you
like, so, you know, make some attempt at jumping, even if so it's not a realistic.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And again, that wasn't the intention of the law. Is it going to happen? I don't know. But I'm sure someone would try something like that just to basically tick that box and to be able to capitalize on any crooked throws. But they're not really contesting, if you get me, you know? So yeah, I didn't see anything massive. Well, sorry. Tighe, I do feel for Tighe and I feel for referees because it was rammed in November. And to be fair, it worked, right? And I don't think this won't work. I don't think any of this is unworkable. I just think that it's like they're already trying to master a game that's incredibly competitive. There's some tiny margin between winning and losing. And in season, very close to Six Nations, the week of a massive Champions Cup week, they're thinking about things that are new. And that can be good. There's nothing wrong with that. But twice in a season for law trials and changes, for me, is a little bit much. And even for the viewers, you know, the game's already very complicated. Mm-hmm. Constantly tinkering with it isn't ideal either.
Yeah, and it's funny that the logic actually given to for some of these laws is trying to simplify the game.
Yeah. But,
you know, how are you simplifying it by making multiple law changes mid-season? Anyway, we'll park that for now and we'll keep an eye on it and we'll see what teams are going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. And the Six Nations coaches even have a few weeks to see how things are looking and come up with some plays of their own. Because I do obviously want to talk about Leinster and La Rochelle and just that incredible finish at Stade Marcel de Flandre. Clock is in the red. La Rochelle have a scrum deep inside Leinster's 22 after that that kick at goal had hit the post and Leinster given and a knock on, Leinster give up a scrum. Even though Leinster were winning at the time, ahead of that scrum, what would you have put Leinster's win probability percentage at at the time. If all La Rochelle have to do is lock out a scrum, get the ball back to Antoine Astoy and kick a drop goal to win it. How confident were you that Leinster could actually get out of that hole?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad because of the I didn't think I wasn't fearing the scrum penalty. You know what I mean? Like I and it sounds if that scrum had been on the left-hand side, I would have been more worried, if that makes sense. Because of where the scrum was on the right and has to have been a right footer, it's you gotta go twice or three times the same way to get far post, if you get me, to get him in an ideal position. So I always felt he was going to be kicking with momentum, and more than likely on the right hand side of the post, unless they're really organized and patient. And I felt that, you know, Roger, when he analyzed that, it's a great opportunity for him to talk about, you know, composure deep in the game when you're effectively bollocksed. You know, like they put so much into that game. The way Leinster play, it's energy sapping for both teams, and I just felt that, yeah, I felt he maybe was a little bit rattled, obviously, and I rate him highly, but like obviously he missed two a shot at goal, two out in the full with kicks, an offload that didn't go to hand, yeah, I think, you know, he just a bit more patient there, and they go probably had to go twice more same way to get him on that angle where. He's on the far side, he's on the left-hand side of the post, if that makes sense, and it's a much better angle for him. Like he didn't really have a great block, and in fairness, Van der Fleer got to him. But I think that they were structurally, if you're coaching that, you'd be saying, lads, you know, what are our best chances of giving us the likely return there? And what they did didn't help him. You know what I mean? They didn't help him. But yes, what bravery from La Rochelle. And La Rochelle showed they're still fighting that dog, you know. And Rog afterwards, like he said, I saw enough. And Jesus, yeah, like no doubt he did because, you know, Leinster are in many people's eyes, well, they're certainly one of the contenders. They're a genuine contender to win it. And they made him look very human. And they'll be the ones saying, look, if we hadn't lost, both props during the game because there wasn't a lot. There was a few penalties won, you know, early in the second half at scrum time, which certainly had momentum. And obviously, no Dante, no Skelton, no Bougerie, no Latu, plus the injuries they had during the game. I think La Rochelle definitely know that they can beat anyone in this competition if it becomes a fight like that. Yeah.
From a Leinster point of view, though, like that last passage of play, if you're looking for the perfect summary of what Leinster have become under Jacques Nienaber, that's kind of it, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And this is the beauty of it because, you know, you could spend 20 hours watching the Springboks defensive system under Nienaber. You could spend 40 hours watching them under Leinster. You could know it inside out. You could try and get players to do it, but you wouldn't get it done to the level that he's able to get those players to do it. Sure, he has good players. The Box, Leinster, there's good players that are around. But it's the wrinkles on it. It's the weak points and how to cover up for those and who does what and then getting players to actually buy into that and apply themselves and consistent. I mean, there hasn't been a bad Leinster performance defensively this year, I don't think. In what are they, the 12 games now? You know, it's pretty much every week, you know, copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste. So they can actually say, well, we have that now. Obviously, I think they have to evolve a little bit, but I mean, they're so comfortable, and it wasn't just that period, which is massively impressive. There was times during the first half where La Rochelle were just bringing it in a very, you know, smart way. You know, they were asking questions of the defense, but a mixture of power and skill, and Leinster just kept coming up with the moments that quashed the energy in La Rochelle's attack. So, yeah, it was fascinating. It was a fascinating contest, like high level, the test match level for me.
It's really interesting to see, like, there's a portion of Leinster fans, I think, out there who are still slow still slow to come around to how the culture of the team has changed and the way they're playing has changed. Where I put up a couple of posts on Twitter towards the end of the match, just general, what a brilliant end to that game. You know, Leinster played right up till the end, etc., etc. And so I got a couple of interesting replies from people saying along the lines of, you know, unless Leinster start working on their attack, they're going to be found out. I've seen friends I play rugby with in the big WhatsApp group talking about how they're, you know, they'll be found out when they come up against some of the big, against a Bordeaux or a Toulouse or something like that. There still seems to be a sense out there among some Leinster fans that unless they're putting 40 plus points on a team in the first half, unless they're putting 40 plus points on a team in a pool game, then they're not really playing well. They've kind of become so used to breezing their way through things that they're slow to come around to this idea of defence winning a game rather than attack winning a game.
Yeah, and I can see why. I mean, but unfortunately, the other way hasn't led to trophies. And
exactly.
Professional sport is about winning and not just your win percentage, but winning the important games. And the important games are playoffs and knockout rugby. And Leinster have been brilliantly consistent at scoring lots of points early doors and seasons, a high percentage of winning games, looking really good, getting to finals, semi-finals, but just not winning. So, you know, there's no doubt what the players want. The players want to win, and they've looked at how they can win, and they've decided that they're going to evolve. There's no doubt that they would like to be scoring a little bit more freely. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like how you build a house with foundations first. And the foundations that they're building are around set piece, and Rabah is a part of that. You know, someone who can come in and win penalties at scrum time, and you know, Leinster scrum can be messy sometimes, Neil, as we've spoken about before. But they do want to. Part of that messiness is an eagerness to be dominant, and when it works great, and when it doesn't, it can be frustrating. And you know, we saw a glimpse, a very small glimpse of an evolution of their attack, you know, for the McCarthy try. McCarthy try, from the power play. And that's great because we actually haven't even seen much of that. And we haven't seen much of that yet. So that's a start. That's a start. So you can see, okay, there's something that they obviously spotted, they worked on, they implemented, and they get confidence from that. And now you might see a bit more this week against Bath. And then unfortunately for Leinster fans, it stops. Okay, obviously, there's a match against the Stormers, but the majority of those players will then be gone for a little while, and they'll come back. And it's just a case of how quickly they can, you know, get that balance right between attack and defence. But like, what do you like in your team? You know, you support, and like, I'm a United fan, so I don't have much to shout about. But like, you want a team, but I've been impressed by them recently because they seem to be working a lot harder. You know, they're harder to break down. They're showing a bit of character. Obviously, you want to see flair and attacking skill and all that stuff, but there's also a lot to like about teams that, you know, represent you or your club, you know, with heart and passion, etc. And I think Leinster at the moment, they're doing that every week. They're doing it every week. We can question some of their lack of attacking game, but as I said, the foundations are pretty strong at the moment. And while Irish got very close to them and could have won the match, they didn't, and Leinster be hoping that this I suppose love of being in a fight and dominating those small moments will last all the way through. So when you play a team like Toulouse or Bordeaux, who are more free flowing than La Rochelle at the moment, that it takes them completely out of sync, and they're not used to that. La Rochelle, in fairness to them, have always been a team they can play as well, but they've always been a team who thrived in a type of game that was there on Saturday and Sunday. Leinster haven't been, you know, historically they haven't been. That's when they've come unstuck. So I think Leinster will be pretty happy that they're addressing some of the issues that were there and led them to not being champions, and win one European Cup again, break that hoodoo, and then start to evolve again. You know, if that's what everyone feels is best. But I understand if you're a Leinster fan and you're used to Leinstertainment or whatever, It is still entertaining for me, but it's very different.
One more Leinster question, which is half an Ireland question as well. Ryan Baird, current form, since he's managed to shake off his injury problems, to be honest, since he got his 40 minutes in the AIL, Ryan Baird's current form, and how close is he to nabbing that starting six spot in the Six Nations? Or are you still looking at Tyburn at six with McCarthy Ryan in the second row?
Yeah, it's a big conversation, isn't it? He's a different profile. I'm not sure. I'm not mad about Tig as a six, to be honest, anymore. I think he's a better second row. And there's a premium on more power and athleticism. A different profile than Tig. Tig is still, and adds value to any team he's picked in. But yeah, I would be saying. The Baird or Conan, even, you know, might suit that Ireland game a little bit better, you know, the way Ireland want to play. But lots of whoever they pick, they'll be fine. But yeah, I think Baird has really grabbed the last month, hasn't he, since that Turn Your Club game, and come back with a bang.
Yeah, he's been in great form. We'll wrap it up in a couple of minutes. I do want a quick mentions for Ulster and Connacht. Apologies to Ulster and Connacht fans. Just given the way the week has gone and what's at stake this weekend, we haven't had too much time to talk about you. We'll give you higher slots next week. On Ulster, three defeats in a row now in the Champions Cup. But am I mad enough to think that I still actually give them a decent enough chance of qualifying out of that pool this weekend? If they can get that bonus point win against Exeter, who I don't think they're going to be sending a particularly great team over there, considering they're bottom of the pool as well with 0 points. And if Ulster can get a good bonus point win against Exeter, then you're really just hoping for Bordeaux to put up a score on the Sharks to give you a really good chance. That game is in Bordeaux as well. How interested are the Sharks going to be in it? I actually somehow give Ulster a half-decent chance of still qualifying.
Yeah, I did it once.
Am I mad?
No, I did it good, and that's okay. I know that we've had a good weekend, but this is why we were frustrated in round one and two. You know, because teams, not saying Ulster did this. Well, they did a little bit by the team they sent to lose, but they do know that, you know, round four in the current format, strange things can happen, and you don't need a huge amount to get out. That's the challenge. And Ulster, you would fancy Bordeaux to hammer the Sharks, just the way Bordeaux are playing, and you would also fancy Ulster to beat Exeter, I think, you know, because they'll want to build on the Connacht game in particular, back in Ravenhill. It'll basically be hopping. Exeter are very much up and down, particularly they're more down more than they're up at the moment, and you'd imagine that they won't have a huge amount of interest in it, or say it won't be the priority. So it could be an amazing result for Ulster to get into the knockout stages again, but more importantly, I think it'll be get a good win and get points next week in the URC, and if you qualify, you qualify.
Mm-hmm. So for the record, for Ulster fans, they have to beat Exeter if they do want to qualify. Beat Exeter with a bonus point, and then hope for a heavy, heavy Sharks defeat against Bordeaux. Ulster behind Sharks by 56 points on the points difference, and that's where the swing needs to be. So that's what they would need to overcome. A win of any kind will put Ulster into the Challenge Cup at the very least. Finally, on Connacht, look, just in an ideal situation in the Challenge Cup, three bonus point wins out of three. They're guaranteed to top their pool. They're guaranteed home advantage for the round of 16. They need a draw or a win of any kind, and they're going to be one of the top two seeds going into the knockout stages, which would keep them at home all the way through to a semi-final as well. The big news of the week, though, and it's really good news, JJ Hanrahan available for selection again. Whether or not he plays this week or next week, great to have a player like that back for Pete Wilkins' side.
No, it's huge, and he was so impressive last year before his injury. He probably is a bit of a hybrid between Ione and Jack. If he's kind of in the middle in terms of skill set. So Ione's very, very much based around, I suppose, instigating attacking the line, being a playmaker. Jack is kind of a game manager, excellent kicking game. You know, obviously he can do everything, but and then you've got JJ, who's a bit of both.
and good, you know, very smart tactician. So hopefully he can, it's great to have him back so early, because, you know, originally when it happened, they thought he was gone for the whole season. Obviously his contract's up. I've had a few clubs in France ring me about him. So I don't know if he wants to go back there, but certainly, yeah, he could be someone who's important for Connacht, because they're, I know that they've had great results in the Challenge Cup, but when they come out of this, you know, they're under pressure now in the URC. They need all their best players available, and they need to just find some form in the URC.
Yeah, they need to go on a run, and who knows, maybe Gigi Hanrahan could spark it. That's where we'll leave it, Birch. I might see you at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. Leinster and Bath, looking forward to it. That is live on RT2 and RT Player. Live commentary on RT Radio 1 as well. And we will be back this time next week for another RT Rugby Podcast.